making sense of the political turmoil in Ontario.
Most people in this province or in Canada as a whole tend to vote for the lesser of perceived evils. I think we saw that south of the border last year with the presidential election. There were a lot of people that voted for Donald Trump that were not at all enthusiastic about him, but simply did not want his opponent to get into the White House. And in Ontario, we have a very similar type of a system. Basically, if you're not voting for one of the major parties, you are effectively wasting your vote.
On the feature today, political scientist David Coises on the current problems in the Ontario PC Party and the choices Christians are facing there in the upcoming provincial election. In the news, an update on Mike Schutten's health after his cycling accident, a look back at this summer's We Need a Law flag displays, an unusual pro-life parade float in BC, and what happens when government cuts funding to a pro-life group.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
As you've no doubt heard by now, the director of ARPA's We Need a Law campaign was involved in a very serious cycling accident in northern BC late last month. I managed to get hold of Mike Schutten to get an update on how he's doing. I talked to him by telephone from a hospital bed that's been set up in his home in Yarrow, BC.
It's actually probably a blessing in disguise, Al, that I recall nearly nothing from the accident. I was on about a 65-kilometer bike ride and 20 kilometers into it, just really enjoying myself. And the next thing I know, I'm laying on the road with paramedics all around me, telling me not to move. I don't remember the truck hitting me. I have talked to the police, and according to their report and the witnesses, what the witnesses have said, a truck clipped me with its mirror as it was going past me, and I went down immediately. I didn't roll. I didn't go flying through the air. And somehow in that process, my pelvic bone got all busted up. So I have a broken pelvis and a broken shoulder. Both have been surgically repaired. And I won't be able to walk for at least the next month. I can't put any weight on my left leg. So physically, it's going to be a long road before I'm better. But mentally, I can tell that things are getting much better already 2 weeks after the accident. My mind is more sharp, especially in the morning. It does fade in the afternoon. That's part of the mild concussion and being hit by a truck. But things are definitely improving, and I've got good care here at my home through the occupational therapists and nurses who visit me here.
As to the impact of the injuries on the work of We Need a Law going forward,
the staff has been really good. You know, ARPA Canada and the We Need a Law campaign have a great team in place, and they've taken over all the things that I normally would do. But of course, a lot of the events that I had been planning to attend and meetings that had been set up had to be canceled. There was just nothing we could do about that. But I expect to start easing back into work probably within the next 7 to 10 days, just slowly doing a few things in my home office here as I can. And I've been encouraged to do that by the medical professionals. They said, just try it a little bit and see how far you can go without pushing yourself too hard. But everything will be done just from my home office. I don't expect that I can travel or get on an airplane for at least a couple of months just because of the high levels of discomfort that go along with the fractured pelvis. But yeah, hopefully within the next 7 to 10 days, I can start engaging with a few emails and hopefully working along with Alicia and Anna on some of the other projects that are going on this fall.
We Need a Law has been busy this summer organizing and facilitating more flag displays. Anna Neuhaus has had a hand in 3 of the displays that took place in BC this summer. She says in every instance, there was definitely an impact.
People react. They say, wow. They say it's a really beautiful display, which gives us an opportunity to say, yes, it is, but it's not for a really beautiful reason. So a lot of people stop and ask. A lot of people think if they run one, they're going to be approaching people all day and bothering people. But actually, a lot of people approached us to say, what's going on here? This is a beautiful display. I saw it from across the park. It really caught my eye. And then they really stop when they realize what it's for and say, wow, that's a really important visual to see. It really makes it hit home a bit more.
The displays have been going on for several years now. There have been more than 30 in total so far. And Anna says the campaign shows no signs of slowing down.
We were considering at one point whether it would keep on going, but it doesn't show any signs of slowing down. There's still lots of cities across Canada that haven't done it. We're hoping to organize one more in Surrey yet for the International Day of the Girl in October, just with the pink flags, and there's a few others going on across Canada as well yet this year.
If you'd like to host a display in your community, we've got Anna's contact information up on the Lighthouse News homepage. What does a mechanical bull have to do with the pro-life cause? You might not be able to make the connection, but the ARPA chapter in BC's Bulkley Valley certainly did. Austin Alai spearheaded an effort to put a pro-life float into the community parade in Smithers a few weeks ago.
Every year there's a fall fair parade here in Smithers that goes down Main Street, and for the past several years we have been participants in that parade, and every year there's a theme, and this year's theme was Party Till the Cows Come Home. I mean, it's a fun theme, but it doesn't really give you much to work with, so you're kind of encouraged to just loosely follow it. So what we did was we took our own pro-life spin on it, and we got our hands on a giant cake from the Langley Pro-Life Group. And that cake was used for a similar parade down there in protest of sex-selective abortion. So the cake used to say, every girl deserves a birthday, but we just changed it to every child deserves a birthday party. So you keep it with the party theme. And then we tow a trailer behind the truck, kind of like a mobile stage. And we had a fake mechanical bull, and I rode on top of it and did my best to try and make people laugh.
He says the response to the float was positive, and the experience was another example of how sometimes it's good to think outside the box to get the pro-life message out there. And a positive conclusion to a rather negative story we featured on Lighthouse News earlier this summer. You may recall that under pressure from the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada, the federal government decreed that it wouldn't be providing any Canada Summer Jobs grants to organizations that were involved in pro-life activism. That stood to impact the Canadian Centre for Bioethical Reform, which had been approved for $150,000 worth of internships. Director Jonathan Van Maren.
Basically, once the Liberal government decided that pro-lifers would no longer qualify for any Canada Summer Jobs money, we took our need to Canadian pro-lifers and said we need to hire a lot of pro-life students because we're trying to reach Canadians this year on a scale we've never done before. Our goal is to show pictures of abortion victim photography 4 million times, and people responded overwhelmingly. We were very taken aback by just how generously people responded to that.
In fact, Van Maren says they managed to fundraise every single dollar they lost in government funding.
We essentially asked for $150,000. So we hired 19 interns this year, even more than in previous years. So in terms of expanding, we fundraised precisely the amount that we were denied by the government.
He concedes they are going to have to work harder to do this again next year, but he says they will have more lead time to put that campaign together. Back with more after this.
Canada is a great place to live, and we enjoy many freedoms, including freedom of religion and freedom of assembly. The Criminal Code protects these freedoms. For example, the code prohibits obstructing a minister who is performing religious duties or disrupting a church service. But a new bill, Bill C-51, would remove this clause. Please send an easy mail to your MP explaining the importance of upholding the freedom to gather for religious, social, or moral purposes without fear of disruption. Visit easy.arpacanada.ca.
And we're back on the program. There's a provincial election coming up in Ontario less than a year from now. Voters are due to go to the polls on June 8th of next year. And there's a lot of turmoil in Ontario politics heading into that vote. Patrick Brown's PC party is facing considerable internal dissension. Several unsuccessful nominees are going to court, challenging the way nomination procedures have been run. Social conservatives in that province are becoming increasingly concerned with what they see as a drift by the Ontario PCs into social liberalism. That has prompted the creation of several new political parties and some protest movements against Brown's leadership. To talk about all these developments, I'm joined on the program this week by Dr. David Koizis. Dr. Koizis is the longtime head of the political science program at Redeemer University College in Ancaster, just outside of Hamilton. He no longer holds that position, but he's still a keen follower of Ontario politics. Dr. Koizis, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Al. I'm pleased to be here.
First of all, we want to talk about the turmoil in Ontario provincial politics, but off the top, I want to say this is not about partisanship. As you probably know, David, ARP has always been very nonpartisan, but the reality is that for a lot of Christians in Ontario right now, they're faced with some electoral dilemmas. On the education front, for example, Kathleen Wynne's Liberals have managed to alienate a lot of traditional Christian and social conservative voters with that sex ed curriculum piece. And that means that in a normal election cycle, those people might vote against the Liberals, which would probably put them in the PC camp. But the perceived reality now is that Patrick Brown's party hasn't done much to impress that same block of voters, correct?
Well, I think that's true. And I think one of the things that we need to be aware of the way that politics works, especially in Canada and other countries that have an electoral system similar to ours, is that parties are loose coalitions of disparate groups, many of which don't easily coexist with each other within the same partisan body. And I think that's what we're seeing here in Ontario as well. So social conservatives do not make up the whole of the Progressive Conservative Party in Ontario. But, of course, any would-be leader who wants to try to make it to the top in the party is going to have to appeal to as many of those factions as possible.
And that's the critique of Patrick Brown. He used social conservatives to get himself elected to the leadership, but now a lot of those people are looking at him and saying, you've thrown us under the bus. Is that a fair critique?
It is, and it isn't. It is in the sense that I think that Patrick Brown is not following the preferences of social conservatives, but it isn't in the sense that other politicians do the same thing. For example, when George H.W. Bush was president of the United States, there was a pro-life gathering on Capitol Hill in Washington, and he did not go out and join them, but he simply phoned them and talked to them on the phone and expressed support that way. He did not want to have a photo op with pro-lifers on Capitol Hill because his calculation was that that would not help him politically. So I don't think that Patrick Brown is unusual in that respect.
You know, the very fact that there's room for somebody like Sam Osterhoff in the PC caucus says something still about the PCs, right?
It does. And if the party leader does not intervene directly in the vote of a riding association, then yes, you can have people who might be outside of the mainstream being nominated by the riding association.
But we now have the creation of several, what I would call, splinter groups. We first saw it last year with the registration of the anti-sex ed party.
Right.
That was focused on that one issue.
Yes.
Now there's a bunch of new groups coming out of the woodwork. There's Trillium. There's a website called imout.ca, a Facebook group that says Take Back Our PC Party.
That's right.
How much impetus do these groups really have? Are they just a few disgruntled folks, or is there more going on here, you think?
Well, I think they are disgruntled folks. I think there's no doubt about that. Whether they will be able to have an impact on the direction of the Progressive Conservative Party is, I would be very doubtful about that, because it's not clear to me that they represent the broad mainstream. But we've seen something happen similar to that on the federal level when Stockwell Day was elected the leader of the Canadian Alliance. He seemed to be less than skillful at maintaining the loyalty of his caucus, and so a number of people bolted and formed splinter groups in the federal parliament. So we may see something along those lines here. Now, the Trillium Party does have an MPP at Queen's Park, but that's only one person. So whether they will succeed in making a dent in the PC party is really difficult to say at this point. I think they probably will not, but what they could do is end up throwing the election to Kathleen Wynne's Liberals.
Because of the political reality of vote splitting, right? This turmoil
exactly
could play out that way in the election.
That's right. A splintering, forming another party might make sense if we had some form of proportional representation. In a country like the Netherlands, for example, it is not that difficult to get members elected to the second chamber of the Dutch parliament because they have a fairly pure form of proportional representation, that you're voting not so much for a single candidate as for a political party list. If we had something even remotely similar to that here in Ontario, then it might make sense for other parties to try to get into the act. But the system that we have here that's popularly called first past the post tends to favor a two-party system.
And finally, and really this is the nub of the issue, with all the turmoil that's going on in Ontario politics right now, all the stuff we've talked about, what are Christian voters to do? Is it a matter of choosing the lesser of several evils? Do the voters stand on principle, irrespective of the electoral consequences? I think we all recognize these are not easy questions.
They're not. Most people in this province or in Canada as a whole tend to vote for the lesser of perceived evils. I think we saw that south of the border last year with the presidential election, and there were a lot of people that voted for Donald Trump that were not at all enthusiastic about him, but simply did not want his opponent to get into the White House. And in Ontario, we have a very similar type of a system. Basically, if you're not voting for one of the major parties, you are effectively wasting your vote. And so people want to vote for a candidate that they believe has a good chance of winning. And candidates from minor parties simply do not have that.
Sir, it's been fascinating. We'll be watching this. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.